You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
The Sound of Victory, a song playing in the ears over and over again of Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. Pulls off the upset win against Kevin Holland, looked really good doing so, and in the end, it goes down in the books as a fourth round TKO corner stoppage victory for the man they call Wonderboy, about to turn 40 years old. What a fight, what a performance. We got ourselves a top 10 fight of the year, that's for sure. It was a lot of fun to watch. And the event as a whole, it was a long one. It was a grind at times, but the main card came in. We ended up getting a seventh main card fight. We're like, oh my gosh, really? And then guess what? All of them ended before the judges' scorecards. But it ended with Stephen Thompson getting back on track, snapping a two-fight losing streak. So thank you for joining us for the UFC Orlando live post-fight show here on the MMA Fighting YouTube channel. I am Mike Heck back at ya. He is E. Casey Lydon. He is back as well. We're the tag post-fight show tag team champions of the world right now. Reacting to UFC Orlando. It is 2:33 in the morning, and here we are, Casey. We talked about it. We heard from Wonderboy himself just moments ago at the post-fight press conference. He says he broke his hand as well. So we had Kevin Holland breaking his right hand. Stephen Thompson broke his left hand, but luckily he didn't break any of his feet. That was a huge weapon. But the left hand was a huge weapon, too. He landed that a million times. I'm not really stunned that he broke his left hand. But just overall, your thoughts on the fight, which over-delivered, in my opinion, and just the performance from Stephen Wonderboy Thompson.
This was a night of, you know, that y'all must have forgot, basically, with the main event and the co-main event, especially just – I didn't have super high expectations for this fight. I don't know why. And it's a fight that made sense, but – maybe I was just kind of just tired of the Wonderboy story, you know, not his fault. Just know he's been around for a while. We've watched a lot of his fights, but man, I forgot when you put the right opponent across from Stephen Thompson, the person like Kevin Holland, holy moly, that is just fireworks, super exciting. And it's just fun to see Stephen Thompson get to do Stephen Thompson things, get to be Wonderboy. And, you know, his last couple of fights, I know he's been, you know, grinded out, you know, by wrestlers and stuff. And Kevin Holland, you know, even if he may have had that skill set in him, but he chose not to use it. He's just like, you know what? We are coming out for entertainment tonight. We're just going to throw hands and feet. And it was a heck of an entertaining fight. It's a bummer about the hand injury thing. But, man, when those guys are just throwing fists and legs at each other like that, that's going to happen. But Stephen Thompson, man, he's still got it. Where he goes from here, I don't know. But, man, just awesome fight. Super. Too many fights. It's just, even though a lot of the fights are super exciting, just too many fights. But, hey, the main event delivered, and I kind of forgot about it all. It's just like, it was just awesome.
Yeah, it was weird that they couldn't even, it wasn't even timed well enough. And they got right into the first fight. Like, we were still doing the people's pre-fight show when both women were in the cage, like right when the broadcast started, they were ready to go. And we still had a carryover fight from the prelims into the main card. And we're just like, holy cow. But luckily we got some good moments, some fun fights, all finishes on the main card. And it was capped up by Stephen Thompson. And that's kind of the big question. Like, where does he go from here? Because you could go in a number of different ways. Like, you could use him as kind of a, put him in that sort of gatekeeper role right now, sort of where Neil Magny is, maybe like a step higher than that. Build up the Rachmaninoffs and the Bradys and guys like that who are on the come up. You could certainly do that. Or you can sort of do the MMA thing where you remember the thing that most recently happened, which is Stephen Thompson in a fight with a guy that had 15,000 people on their feet cheering and going bananas for 20 minutes as this thing was going on. And I think that's a feeling the UFC wants to continue on. And Wonder Boy's a feel-good story. Can you imagine 40-year-old Wonder Boy Thompson going on a little bit of a win streak, winning 3-4 in a row, and then maybe getting himself a third crack at the belt? I think that's a story the UFC would want to tell, because this is this right now, this is it. Stephen Thompson is in that Ric Flair WWF early, like, to that, like that run where Ric Flair was like, I'm going to keep wrestling until I lose. And then he loses to Shawn Michaels and we thought he was never going to wrestle again. Unfortunately, that wasn't true. But I feel like once Stephen Thompson loses again, the door hasn't been locked behind him for a title shot. But as soon as he loses again, I feel like the lock is going to get thrown. So I think like this is it. This is the run. If he's going to go on it, he's got to do it now. For sure.
I would agree with you, but I swear when he lost to Bilal Muhammad, and we got to see 25 minutes of him being just grinded against a cage or on his back. I'm positive. I said, well, we're never gonna see Wonder Boy have a title run anymore. And then, like I said, I didn't expect this fight tonight. I don't. Even though I knew Kevin Holland was always he was gonna bring that type of fight, but for some reason, in my mind, I couldn't imagine the fight was gonna be this exciting. Where we would honestly start having conversations and going, you know, I could see it. I could see Wonder Boy getting that one big win. Obviously, he needs one big win at least after this. But, you know, it's like, man, he's got one. Without a doubt, he's got one more main event in an arena or one more maybe co-main event for a pay-per-view in him. And it's the Wonder Boy story. I think we're kind of all shocked. I didn't think we're going to be talking about Wonder Boy in this sense. We might predict that he was going to win tonight. But I don't really think we had this type of momentum behind it. So it was shocking, and part of why this sport is freaking awesome.
Yeah, I did pick Wonder Boy to win. It was kind of a reluctant pick. It was more of a perceived value look at it. But I thought it was going to be sort of the fight we saw for like two rounds, and then Wonder Boy starts to sort of pull away like he did in the Jeff Neal fight.
Yeah, more like that.
Yeah. Cruise to a decision. But we didn't get that tonight. We got a fun-ass fight. It's not the fight of the year, people. I'm sorry. I saw people even asking that question. This is not the fight of the year. I'm sorry. This is, it might be in the top five.
That's pushing it.
Definitely. Yeah, it's definitely in the top 10. It's not the fight of the year. Yeah. It is not beating Glover versus Yuri. I'm sorry. It's just not happening. It's not beating Hamza versus Gilbert. It's just not. I hate to tell you. People love to do that. It was super fun. But
there are 14 fights on this card. It was the best of the 14 fights. So it's be happy with that. We don't need to
come on now.
Push our luck.
Come on now. So what we're going to do here is because, I mean, we literally just had a press conference with one guy and we had to wait an awful long time for Stephen Thompson to show up. And I get that. Guy's coming off of a war, had to get all stitched up, had to get medicals done. He had to, you know, take care of himself a little bit, had to go on the ESPN post-fight show. So we had a little while. So we talked about a lot of the storylines and narratives, if you will. So what we're going to do is instead of doing the people's pre-fight show, we're going to do the people's post-fight show here. So we're going to, for the next 20 minutes or so, we're going to take your questions about this card, whatever you want to talk about. You want to talk about what's next for Wonder Boy? You want to talk about what's next for Kevin Holland? You want to talk about RDA's big win? We could talk about whatever you want. You want to talk about Mateus Nicolau ending his current UFC contract with a big win? You want to talk about scary Sergey Pavlovich? We could do that. Roman Dolidze's near STFU TKO type submission. I mean, we saw a little bit of everything tonight. Eric Anders getting back on track. Yasmin Yuragay kicking off the card with a sensational finish. Whatever you want. Let's go. Next 20 minutes. Let's just fire up some questions.
All right. We've already answered what's next for Wonder Boy. Here we go. Let's go to the very first of the card, bottom of the card.
Thoughts on Yasmin? She looked great again tonight. She could be something special for the UFC in Mexico and for Latino fans. Yeah, I agree. She looked great. And it was a good fight, Casey, for a number of reasons. One, because she went out there and got a finish and set the table for a very interesting card. But two, she got thumped a little bit in that first round. Nunes dropped her, had her in some trouble. We got to see her overcome a little bit of adversity and then battle back, which is a great second round and a great finish. They got something with her. They definitely have something. They're super young, so she's going to be kind of growing up in the organization, but another early 20s exciting prospect right now. And right now, this is happening in a division that, let's be honest, we see a lot of up-and-comers and hungry fighters at 125 right now. This division needs somebody like Yasmin, and I think they got something with her. So I agree with everything Brandon said. Your thoughts on her performance and her ceiling right now after two octagon appearances?
She's a legit prospect. I can't go out and say, you know, she will be fighting for the belt. You know, not going that far away, that far yet. But at 23, the fact that she fought through some, for some reason, as fans, we like to see our fighters kind of take a beating and come back a little bit rather than dominate. Somehow domination is kind of boring. So it was really nice to see her kind of take that big shot and go, all right, she can fight. She can be the nail and still come back and finish that fight with hammers. So just super exciting. I think, but he said, just be a big star in Mexico, Latino fans. F that. She's a big star. I think she just has that package. Does she speak English? I'm not sure, actually. Does she speak?
I don't think so. I know her post-fight interview is, I believe, is in Spanish. And I think her press conference was as well. But she'll get that. She'll probably get there at some point.
Regardless, that obviously would help a little bit. But just for the American fans. But I feel she has that thing. Whatever promoters are looking for, she has that thing, that it factor. And yeah, and I hope, don't push her too fast. I don't really have a ideal matchup for her next, but she's here to stay. It's just a great pickup by the UFC.
Yeah, it's kind of tough because there's just not a ton of women in this division.
It's the best division. I don't like it's strawweight. It should be the best.
It's a never let you down division. But yeah. I don't know. Like I saw some people throw some names out. Vanessa Demopoulos was kind of a popular one that I saw. I don't hate that idea. Jin Yu Fry, it's not a bad idea. Something like that, like a little bit of a step up, a little more of a vet name.
Yeah.
But we're not throwing it. We don't need to throw her in there with like Yan Zhonan or Marina Rodriguez right now. But
I,
nice little step up. Somebody, you know,
someone
a little bit of a step up.
Yeah, around 20, not even 15. Around 20, around there. That's why I want to see her. Yeah. Okay, it's interesting.
Does Holland need a new corner that should have pulled him out of the fight at the end of the third round? I don't know. I mean, the hand thing, I mean, again, it's tough because I was live blogging. So I'm like looking up at the screen and typing and then making sure I'm not misspelling things. So it's a fight I'm going to have to go back and watch like with a more clear eye again. Like I feel like I got the gist of it, but I don't have all the ins and outs of it. But Kevin was still like, I thought at the end of the third round, he looked tired. And I even started the live blog around for him. Like, Kevin looks pretty tired, but he gets up and he's smiling. He's laughing. He's talking to Wonder Boy. He's having a good old time in there doing Kevin Holland things. And I didn't see, outside of just him being really tired, I didn't think the fight really needed to be stopped there and then. But again, I have to go back and like rewatch it full on, no distractions, and get a better gauge of that. The momentum was clearly swinging Wonder Boy's way. That was a big third round. Fourth round, obviously, was a 10-8. You scored at a freaking 10-7, which I ain't even gonna hate you for that, because that was just a one-sided thumping. But, you know, even when Dan did the wave-off thing, like, you could have stopped the fight right there, and I would have been okay with it.
Yeah, I thought his hand was so bad he was getting beat up. I thought Kevin Holland verbally tapped. He said, I can't do this anymore. That's what I felt happened. Clearly, we were wrong. And Mariotta's odd gestures confused everybody. But regarding this question, should it ended in the third round? No, I think it was fine. And if anything, halfway through the fourth round, if Bob Perez or even his cornerman would have tried to stop the fight, I would have no issue with it. Because I don't think they knew how bad, because like every handbrake is different. You know, like you saw Kevin Holland's handbrake, he couldn't, like he was in visible pain, while Stephen Thompson says he has a handbrake, but he could still throw punches a bit. No, so their handbrakes are all different. But it clearly looks like Kevin Holland's handbrake was a bad handbrake, one of those handbrakes that we might not see Kevin Holland fight for probably 6 months, because those things have to heal properly. Otherwise, that's a potential career type of injury.
Because he was still chucking it and landing it in the second.
Yeah.
Third, he was still throwing it a little bit. Fourth is when you really started to realize that he was a one-handed fighter. But he's still, like, still kind of throwing it when he was getting in those exchanges. But, yeah, I would have felt a little – I would have felt a little queasy had they let Holland out in that fifth round. I think after the fourth, it was the right call. Like, you couldn't let him back out there. He was just getting thumped. He had no defense. He was a one-handed fighter. And, again, like – I know we want to see more of this. We want to see more of these types of situations. Just like, dude, you're done. Live to fight another day. Who knows? At least, and again, I didn't watch it. I don't know what the corner was. They might have been, I might have seen the same commercial 800 times in a row and missed it. But maybe they tell Kevin, look, man, it's not going well. I'll give you 5 more minutes, but then that's it. You got to show me something or I'm stopping it. And that was the 5 minutes he gave, and they went and stopped it. So I don't know. I'm sure we'll get answers to those questions down the road, but I didn't have an issue with them. I would have an issue if he went out there and fought in the fifth round. That's for sure.
Yeah. Are you been fine if he came out for the fifth round? You think so?
No, sorry. I wouldn't have. I would have had an issue.
Oh, you would have. If he came out in the fifth round. Yeah, me too. Yeah, me
he
too.
Was done.
The fact that I said 10-7, that's what I mean. Like 10-7. That's like the round. Because Kevin Holland has something which is a blessing and a curse in MMA. He doesn't have a button, which is great and exciting because BJ Penn was one of those fighters. You just could not knock him out. Nick Diaz is kind of the same fighter. Nick and Nate, they just don't turn off. But that can – you have to have responsible corners to save you from yourself because you will take just life-changing beatings in fights because you just won't turn off. And you're such a good fighter and so tough. You'll always be in the fight, but – it's just very dangerous. And BJ Penn, he had a lot of those fights where, especially toward the end of his career, he just didn't turn off. He would just get beat up. And that's why these losses felt even worse. Darren Elkins is a bit like that. I don't know how much we'll talk about him. Just the guys that just...
Yeah, it was tough.
They don't have that button that just turns them off. So they'll just take beatings, which is great for promoters and great for excitement. But yeah, it's just... it doesn't make you feel good sometimes.
That fourth round, just last thing on this.
Yeah.
Steven Thompson landed 40. There's like significant strikes and then there's like significant strikes. Steven Thompson landed 48 significant strikes and they were significant strikes. Like everything was with full vigor. They all landed clean. They all got a response. A lot of them hurt Kevin really badly. He just wouldn't fall down. Like, that was a tough round to watch. Like Steven just put it on him, and I give Crew Bob credit for stepping in and stopping it because Kevin would have kept going. Like up to him, probably just kept going. But
I'm sure
Kevin. There's a piece of Kevin that was probably a little bit relieved too. He's like, oh, thank God, thank God. But Kevin's tough as shit, man. He's so tough. He'll be back.
I want to talk about this gentleman now.
This is an interesting question. Is RDA the greatest resume in all of MMA history? So I'm going to let you defend your take in a moment because I saw you tweet this as well and I wanted to ask you about this. You said that this was a y'all must have forgot moment for RDA, kind of a fight, kind of a performance. To me, this is exactly the fight I expected. I didn't think – I thought Barbarita would – I thought RDA would light him up a little bit more on the feet and Barbarina would just take it and bleed. And then eventually how the fight ended, we'd see it in the third. But RDA was, I believe he was the biggest favorite on the card by a mile. This is what we expected. So I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just curious as to why you feel like this is a y'all must have forgot performance when this is kind of a tailor-made matchup for him.
Well, according to the Tapology, it's just straight pickups. I don't know about the betting lines. Yeah, he was a heavy favorite, but there were six other fighters who were bigger underdogs than Barbarina. So, but I understand what you're saying. RDA was a heavy favorite. Yeah, these are just straight pick'ems, and these aren't betting lines. I kind of like going by that a little more. I think that's a little more accurate for my taste. But I just was so impressed by RDA. There's something about, I guess more. In a sense, like when I say y'all must forget, RDA is just on a level. They're like, I think DC kind of famously said it, there are levels to this game. And RDA is just on a level that Barbarina just can never be on. And the way he just dismantled, and like, and actually I thought the commentary was great. He just said, it's like, there was no wasted movement. RDA just looked like everything he was doing had a plan. He wasn't just like, I'm just fighting and just kind of, I'm just going to throw this and see what happens. Every single thing RDA did had a plan. It was a plan. And that, to me, like when I'm watching him at his wrestling, like I saw while the fight was going on, people were like, oh, they were kind of like, this is boring or something, you know, what, before the fight got finished. But I was like, I'm just in really admiration for a man like who was, is he the same age as Stephen Thompson? About the same age, like 1 year younger maybe, or?
He's 38, just turned 38. So he's
okay,
they're about like a year and change behind him.
Yeah. You know, guys who have been fighting, both these, like Wonderboy Thompson and RDA, these guys have only fight top 10, top 15 guys for the last decade. And I just think that's so incredible. And these guys can do this at that age, and just all the time in the training rooms, all that mat time, all that drilling, it just shows up. And I was just, when watching RDA fight, I was just so impressed by just how everything he did was just perfect. His movements, his hip placement, his leg rides, it's just, and then Barbarina would get up and fight his way up. He'd take him down and just slowly kind of break down Barbarina. And Barbarina is a very good fighter. He's not an elite fighter, but he's a super good fighter who's, you know, I don't know what, he's had at least 15 fights in the UFC. Like, he's done this for a while. He's fought the highest level of guys, you know. And to see Barbarina just kind of not look like he quite, just look like he didn't belong in there with RDA, you know. And I just think that's so impressive. And like, I forget, because RDA just, yeah, he's not the most exciting personality. I get that. But just pure fighting, I'm always in awe of watching him fight, because he's a true mixed martial artist, I guess.
So he made his debut in 2008 in the UFC, got knocked out by Jeremy Stephens, loses to Tyson Griffin, which in 2008, 2009, like those are solid losses. Wins three in a row, loses to Clay Guida, injury, TKO. This is 2010 Clay Guida. Nothing to snark at. Loses a close splitty to Gleison Tebow. Wins five in a row. Then the rest of the way, loses to Khabib Nurmagomedov. Wins five in a row, which includes one of the most dominant title wins that I can remember. I mean, RDA put it on Anthony Pettis to win the belt. Beat Nate Diaz before that. Knocked out Benson Henderson before that. Knocks out Donald Cerrone in the first round to defend his title. Loses to Eddie Alvarez. Loses to Tony Ferguson. Wins three in a row. This is him going up to 170. Loses to Colby. Loses to Usman. Beats Kevin Lee. Loses to Leon Chiesa. And then goes back to 55. Fights Paul Felder. Beats him. Beats Renato Moicano, short notice opponent, beats Brian Barbarina, and then sandwiched in between those, gets knocked out by Rafael Fiziev, and he's knocking out everybody right now. So, I mean, his losses are like to legit, even at the time, I mean, just the best dudes. Guy's a legend. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's a legend. I don't know if he gets the Conor fight, but I'm glad he keeps calling for it, and he should keep calling for it. It's the fight that got away. It's the fight that got away, and it's a fight that once it got away, we never thought it would ever come back to him. And now it actually logistically makes sense if they wanted to make that fight. But I can totally understand why Conor would be like, nah, not really interested, because I'd favor RDA to win that fight.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And which is, yeah. I mean, if there's betting lines on who Conor's going to fight next, I would say RDA is like one in 50s, one in 100. I don't know.
He's a long shot.
Yeah. Whatever. Like, I probably have like 15 fighters I can name right now before RDA, even though RDA makes a lot of sense.
It does. It makes sense. You have a whole storyline. You could recycle the promo you were going to use for UFC 196 and just add a couple of layers to it. It's easy.
And one of my favorite parts about RDA is like, he lost his first two fights. He got just highlight reeled knockout by Jeremy Stephens, and Jeremy Stephens uppercutted him like from his ankles. And he lost the second fight to Tyson Griffith. That could have been the end for RDA. He could have been released. He could have gone back to Brazil. He could have been the Bellator champ now. There's so many different ways that RDA story could have gone. But the UFC kept him around after those two losses, and yeah, it's just it's wild. So like, even I always think about that when I see, you know, fighters just get their butt kicked in fights, you know, especially their first fight, and go, you know what? But maybe this guy was going to be a future Hall of Famer. We don't know. It's just these are like, there's no way after watching him lose Tyson Griffin where there was like, listen to any podcast back then. These guys are going, I know RDA got his butt kicked his first two UFC fights, but this guy, he's got it. He's got it. He's a future Hall of Famer.
He's going to be the champion.
He's going to be champion. You would never say that, but and that's what I like about RDA, just like, because he's just no frills. Like, he just seems like a guy that just trained really hard and tried hard. He just tried hard and just kept doing it, which I just think is freaking awesome.
Yeah, all his right. Resume is right up there, that's for sure. Yeah.
All right, enough of my RDA love story.
How scary is Pavlovich? Like, did he just jump from 80% on the scare meter to? He might be higher. He might be higher than 97 right now. Yeah, this is the performance he needed, because I picked Ty to win. I expected Sergey to do what he did to Ty early. I expected Ty, because of his durability, to be able to recover from that and survive, maybe even lose a 10-8 first, but at least make it to round two and then do Ty Tuivasa things. And Sergey's like, nope, not letting that happen. And the first shot he landed, Ty's whole demeanor changed. Like, unlike the Derek Lewis fight, unlike the Ciryl Gane fight, this was like, oh crap. And when Ty Tuivasa, when that fight was stopped, and Ty was like smiling and be like, Sergey, you're a good fighter. I mean, Ty looked like he got run over by a car. Like, he just looked destroyed. And it was 50. it was a vicious beating. Sergey's the real deal. And this is the kind of finish that he needed after the Derek Lewis win, because I know a lot of people thought that was kind of questionable. I saw someone post on Twitter after seeing the Ty, I forget who it was, but I'm just kind of paraphrasing. After seeing the way he finished Ty Tuivasa, I no longer think the Derek Lewis stoppage is a bad one.
I know they're trying to say, the Derek Lewis stoppage sucked. It sucked because what we're saying about Sergey Pavlovich tonight, we should have been saying after the Derek Lewis fight, but we kind of got robbed of that because of the early stoppage. The stoppage tonight was completely proper. That's how you stop fights. You know, these guys at this level, you know, that's a proper stoppage. But I said Derek Lewis. I still think that was a horrible stoppage. But I don't think Derek Lewis is going to win that fight. But that's not why it's early stoppage. But
Did you see? Yeah. I just saw this on Twitter. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to change subjects, but I reacted to it. So, did you see Shavkat Rakhmonov's tweet an hour ago?
No, I didn't. What is it?
It's awesome. He just goes, "Congratulations to Still Dangerous Wonder Boy, and happy retirement to Trailblaze to Top." Oh, Shavkat. Dang. Damn.
Dang.
That was pretty good.
I can't wait. I know everyone loves Hazmat, but to me that's he's the guy, I think. But we'll see.
He's a good. He's getting Jeff Neal. Love that fight. Nice little step up in competition for him.
All right.
So I will take a couple more. Yeah, Pavlovich is legit. I'm very curious to see where he goes and how he's now. Like, when the UFC has their war room meetings, their matchmaker meetings, it'll be interesting to see how they view him. Where they put him in the conversation. Is he now part of that, like, that four-man race to the belt? Or is he just the guy on the outside? If he's not, who is the guy on the outside? Because it's either going to be Ciryl Gane or Curtis Blaydes, the way that it looks right now. If he's in the top four sort of mix right now, I'm curious to see how the matchmakers view him.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It sucks because Oh, because I think so much.
No,
I'm sorry.
No, I was saying you're good. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I think so much, unfortunately, the war in the Ukraine really is going to hurt Sergey's as far as his UFC career, just because it's just world politics. I don't think the UFC can have a big event in Moscow right now for obvious reasons. And that just sucks for him as far as being a prize fighter. So that's actually going to be the big issue right now, I feel, for him. So we'll see. I always like your takes on these because I'm kind of indifferent to call outs, but I like you're big on proper call outs. So
what do you think about the McGregor and Khamzat calls? It seemed like bad call outs to me. No way either of those fights happen. We talked about the McGregor call out. I don't mind it. RDA, we talked about his resume. He understands he's not fighting for any more belts. He just wants fun fights before he turns the page on life. And there's a story here. He was supposed to fight Conor at UFC 196. RDA gets injured. We end up getting the Nate Diaz fight. Nate becomes a massive superstar. RDA is just done. He's out of the picture because after the first Diaz fight, they were going to run that one back. And then Conor went and fought for the second title. And RDA was just donezo. Like, he was just out of the conversation altogether. And now, feasibly, it's possible. Like, you could do it. Like, you could make that fight right now because McGregor against you, Casey, sells a million pay-per-views. Yeah. I'd watch the hell of that, by the way. But it would make sense, and there's a story there, and you could do that. The Khamzat call-out, I absolutely loved the call-out, and I'll tell you why. Roman Dolidze has come from nowhere, much like a guy named Khamzat Chimaev. Kind of an afterthought. No one really expected this guy to be ranked or even be talked about. And then he goes out there and just finishes three dudes in a row, finishes Jack Hermanson, took the fight on short notice. A crazy finish. I've never seen anything quite like it. Obviously, I've seen a calf slicer and a ground and pound, but I've never seen them put together like that. And this dude's going to be a top 10 middleweight next week. He's going to be the number 8 middleweight in the world in the UFC rankings. When if I told you in January, my bold prediction is that Roman Dolidze is going to be a top 10 middleweight at the end of the year, you would ask for me to be fired. But now look at this guy. And he goes out. And what I liked about the call out is he's probably not going to get it. But either way, worst case scenario, he's setting himself up for a big fight with this performance. He calls out Khamzat. Now you get seeds planted. Worst case scenario, he's going to fight like Darren Till or Dricus du Plessis next. He might even get like a Marvin Vettori fight next at this point. That's where this guy is. Ooh. And you know what I liked about the call out as well? He said the man's name. He didn't call him the wolf. He didn't call him anything else. He said Khamzat Chimaev. I loved it. I loved the call out. You took the moment. You got so much momentum from that win. Everyone was buzzing about the finish. He called out Khamzat. He ain't going to get it. But I liked the gusto. I thought it made sense. I had no issue with either call out. None of these fights are going to happen next. None of them. But I did like the gusto from both.
So you're okay with call outs for fights that aren't going to happen? As long as they have
okay,
the right...
There is one call out that was awful tonight. And I hate to do this because I like this guy a lot. Eric Anders, horrible call out tonight.
Who was it?
He called out Jamie Pickett for a fight next week because Bo Nickel got hurt. They rebooked that fight for March like 7 weeks ago. Almost like it's so long ago they rebooked that. It's supposed to go down March 4th. It's signed. It's happening. So Jamie's going to be like, nah, I'm instead of fighting Bo Nickel in a fight that's going to give him so much spotlight, you know what? I'll fight you next week. Come on, man. You can't get that fight unless like Bo gets hurt again and Jamie's like, all right, fine, I'll fight him. But he's fighting the super prospect right now. Like, the biggest fight he could possibly get.
You call out Bo Nickel. You don't call out Jamie Pickett. You tell him, hey, UFC, rip up that contract of Pickett. I want to fight Bo Nickel. I want to, or something. You don't go after Pickett.
Yeah, I would have been better with that. Now, maybe Eric just didn't know. Eric's a busy dude. He's a family man. Dude's always trying to, on the grind, trying to make some money. I get it. Maybe he's not tapped into the MMA space. But if you're going to try to call somebody out, you could just jump on Tapology. Jump on Tapology, see what's great going site, on there. Site. Go on MMAfighting.com. We reported that as Dunzo a while ago. That was a bad call out. That, as AK would say on to the next one, if your matchmaking suggestion mimics that, AK would say your pick is doo-doo. That was a doo-doo call out. Because it's not happening. Yeah. It's not happening. I love you, Eric. It just was a bad call out. It was a great performance from Anders too, but the call out, and then he went to the back and did a post fight interview, and he like doubled down on it. Like nobody told him. Come on, man.
Jose could have read it to him. I don't want to tell him.
I had more of an issue with that. But you know what? You know what's crazy is that most people forgot about it. Because even like the media members, like, ooh, we called out Jamie Pickett for a fight next week. I'm like, well, you know what's not going to happen? Because Jamie Pickett was pulled off UFC 282 so long ago when once Bo got hurt. And they just rebooked that matchup. Because why book anything else for Bo Nickel?
So did Eric Anders, so he wanted to fight next week? Is it? You want to fight
his initial call out was JB. I know you still need an opponent. I'll fill in and fight you next week since Bo's hurt.
So he thought Jamie Pickett was still training for a fight. It was going to show up at the T-Mobile Arena and go, all right, UFC, I hope someone shows up. Is that what Eric Anders is thinking is going on right now in Jamie Pickett's life?
I think so. Like I missed it, but I saw people on Twitter talking about it. So I went on a Slack chat. I'm like, did Eric Anders just asked to fight Jamie Pickett on next week's card? And they're like, yep, he sure did. And I'm like, oh man. I mean, his heart at least was in the right place. He just didn't know what was happening. And again, not all fighters are like going to every event and watching every card and listening to every podcast. Like, I get it. The man has a life. He's got other things going on, but you know, just quick glance at the old Tapology page and you'll realize, probably shouldn't have done that. Should have used that call for somebody else. But that's all. The other two call outs, like, they ain't going to happen, but I like the gusto.
Yeah, I think Angela Hill called out other call outs. What? Angela Hill called out Carolina for UFC London. So that made sense. But
Natan Levy called out Kanye West. Kanye. So that was a call out.
I love when John Anik gets to say, your boy. I love
that's exactly how I would say it too. Yeah, boy. I'd get so into it.
I can tell he loves to say that. He was so excited to say that. Oh, Anik's so good.
Speaking of John Anik, by the way, Jose Youngs got to sit down with John Anik while in Orlando for episode 2 of Anything But Fighting. And I cannot wait to watch this.
Oh.
Episode, because they're going to be talking about New England sports the entire time, and I am jazzed, and I am ready for this. So I think that's dropping Tuesday, so stay tuned for that.
All right. I saw that clip earlier. I think we got a sneak clip on Slack, so I don't want to talk about it yet. But
yeah.
All right.
Thoughts on where Mateus goes from here? UFC still shows a penchant for not marketing flyweights that ain't Moreno or Davison. So this is one of the interesting ones because I'm trying to prepare for On to the Next One tomorrow. I have no idea what to do with this guy. I have no idea. The dude, he said at the end of the fight, I'm now an unemployed fighter because that was the last fight in his deal. He's hoping he gets re-signed. I don't think he's going anywhere else. PFL isn't doing it. Bellator doesn't have a flyweight division. Like, just one game in town, really, unless you want to go to one and deal with whatever the hell is going on over there or go to Brave or something. But he's probably going to get re-signed because they're going to need him right now. I don't know. Like, I honestly have no idea what they're going to do here because Figgy's the champion. Moreno's the interim champion. These two guys are supposed to fight at the pay-per-view in January in Brazil. That's right now supposed to be the main event. But then we heard about this James Krause situation and we don't even know what's going to happen. Like, we don't know if Brandon's going to just say like, F it, I'm just going to find somewhere else to go and fight. Or if he's just gonna be like, no, like I'm not doing this. I'm going to wait for my guy to be cleared or whatever he's thinking and then do it. So then we have Pantoja, who's the backup right now. At least that's what he told Guillermo Cruz. I don't know. I think for him, get your dollars, get re-signed, make that money, son, and just keep the phone by you at all times. Because if they need to fill in for something, for a big opportunity, you got to be ready to go. Whether it's for the belt or to fight Pantoja or something, if this fight for the belt actually happens to the Tetralogy, or for some reason something happens with like Alex Perez, because he's had a hard time just getting to fights these days. If something happens there, you send him to Perth to fight Kai Kara France, like you just got to be ready. You just got to be ready. This is a great win and a great performance. It's going to age well, I think. But you kind of have to strike where the iron's hot before it's forgotten. Royval's hurt. It's just not a lot of ton of options for him. So it's just kind of...
How hurt is Royval? Because, man, I want to see that fight. Is he like hurt, like, or, you know?
I think he's... I'll pull it up. Yeah. He was supposed to fight in 2 weeks. Fight on that last fight night card with Amir Albazi. Yeah. But now Albazi's fighting... And I forget who he's fighting. What did he say? There we go. Heartbroken to say I'll not be competing December 2 training injuries. Last week after practice, I was feeling pain in my wrist. After a few days of the deformity, bruising, and the pain not going away, I went to doctors and determined I broke my wrist. Thankfully, he won't need surgery, but he will not be recovered in time to compete. First time ever had a pull out of a fight. Broken wrists, 4 to 6 weeks, depending on how bad it is, maybe a little longer. Who knows? Royval could maybe fight in like first quarter, depending. I don't know. Yeah. So maybe he is on the table.
Any updates with Mr. Aspinall?
I've heard nothing. Yeah. And that's another name we keep forgetting about, is Tommy Aspinall. But again, he is coming off a loss. It was a weird one, an injury one, but fortunately he's going to have to kind of like build his way back up, but he's still really young and he's only going to get better. So him and Sergey will be fun. I don't know if we want to do that right now, though.
I think Aspinall would need to. Obviously, I still think he's got another 6 months. These are heavyweights, so you got to make sure those ligaments are very healed. But obviously, a healthy Aspinall and Sergey, I want them to fight eventually. Just I don't think we're going to see that. Maybe 2024 or maybe. Late 2023. Yeah.
Yeah, no idea. I'll take one more question. One more.
Ooh, gotta make this a good one then. You guys are doing On to Next tomorrow, right?
We are indeed.
Okay, so not doing any matchmaking questions, gentlemen and ladies.
Outside, if there's a matchmaking question outside of the main card, we could do it.
Nope.
or for any of the losers on the main card.
Not talking any James Krause. You go watch our pre-show, pre-fight Q&A.
Yeah, we've talked a lot.
Yeah, nothing's changed. Real quick, why I find a good question.
Which fighter called out, yay, the guy with the mustache talked over Mike? Natan Levy called out Kanye West. If you know Natan Levy, you probably know why. If you know what has gone on the last several months with Kanye, I think you would understand why. But just go watch it. It's not a long scrum. I think it's like 4 minutes. I think it was basically Jose interviewing Natan Levy, but he explains why. So you can go check that out.
Come on, guys. I'm trying to find it. Give me a question about tonight.
Anything? Hey, look, we could be done if there's no more. It's okay. We got a pay-per-view coming up next week, so there's going to be content galore. Yeah. Don't you worry.
You know what? It is extremely late on the Eastern Coast. So
what? It's 3:16, baby. 3:16. There's the music. All right, we're done. Thank you all very much. I think we'll have the full crew back next week. Next week, a lot of fun. UFC 282. They're back in Vegas. Last pay-per-view of the year. We are doing a watch party next Saturday as well. So MMA Fighting YouTube channel is going to be pumping. So get ready. So for Casey, I am Mike Heck. Get some sleep, everybody. If you want to send in your matchmaking suggestions for On to the Next One, do them in the next like 6 hours or so. You can Instagram me, Instagram AK. If you listen to the show, you know how to do it. So for Casey, I am Mike Heck. Thanks for watching. Good night, everybody. Or shall I say, good morning, everybody.
Happy birthday, Jose.
Oh, yes.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.